Ezekiel 25:17. The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the iniquities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men. Blessed is he who in the name of charity and goodwill shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
It's rare to start an edition of Sunday Sermons with breaking sports news, but we are, I think in this case, obligated to do exactly that. Your United States Olympic men's basketball team is in very serious danger of losing their opening round game to France.
Oh my gosh. Above average at that.
15 seconds to play. France 81. The United States of America 74. And it's been an utter and complete fourth quarter collapse by the Americans. In fact, if I've got my math right, and I rarely do, I've got the U.S. missing its last seven shots. And I'd like to call it an upset. I'd like to. But, of course, the dirty little secret is the U.S. internationally, under your guy Pop, hasn't been very good. World Cup play a couple years ago. And in exhibition play heading into the Olympics. Let's remember, in the 2019 FIBA World Cup, we lost to France in the quarters by 11, 89-78. I think we finished seventh in the 2019 FIBA World Cup, and we're on our way to maybe that same sort of Olympic finish on the basis of this start. This is just one of several subjects, Olympic subjects, we'll discuss on today's broadcast. It's Barrero and part-time guy Brett with you until 11, Cake Show 11, until 1 o'clock today. We are on the verge of Vikings training camp. This is the week. It all gets started, and we will cover the Vikings extensively on today's broadcast as well. The abyss is almost over. We'll also discuss the Dream dying in Canton, Ohio. Vixen routed by the now three-time champion Boston Renegades. I got to watch a decent amount of it on DirecTV, and we just couldn't stop them. We actually did very well offensively against a team that apparently never gives up points, but we could not stop them. And at some point, you can't. If you're down, 21 points, you can't keep just trading scores. So the Vixen dream for a football world championship is over. It ends the same way it did four times with the Vikings. Maybe the kiss of death was a tweet from the official Vikings Twitter handle wishing the Vixen good luck and exhorting them to bring it home in Canton. Maybe that's when their chances died. Maybe it was when, unlike Robert Kraft, the New England Patriots owner, our ownership did not stand tall and offer to fly the Vixen to Canton. No, we had to drive. We had to do it the old-fashioned way. Maybe we were spent. Meanwhile, the Renegades, fresh. They got to take the big Bob Kraft Super Bowl bird from the greater New England, from Boston, Massachusetts, to Canton, Ohio. That will be part of the discussion on today's program. You know how we've been told over and over and over, lectured by certain folks, that Tibbs was the root of all evil. There was never a feeling of family. And that was regarding the Timberwolves, and that was holding the team back. People didn't feel invested. They didn't feel like they were all in it together. And now we were going to be a family. We were going to love one another. We were going to respect one another. We were going to make sure everybody felt invested. We were going to be aligned properly. We were going to collaborate. I tried to warn you about just how overcooked that particular angle was, and that lasts as long as or until you get to the first controversy, and then guess what? People are going to do what they feel like they have to do, and there might be some feelings hurt, and there's some feelings hurt right now. We're going to get to that juicy story, which has been covered extensively via The Athletic by Johnny Athletic, who also will join us on tomorrow's broadcast. So a lot of Olympics, some Vixen, a lot of Vikings. And I want to give you a couple of, here's what I'm going to do on the U.S. By the way, I did not get to watch any of the USA versus France. I think that game, you know, NBC's got like 42 platforms. And I believe that game was on Peacock. Okay. I think Peacock is, that's, you know, a streaming deal.
Yeah.
I don't think we have that here. Maybe we do. No. I don't even know it.
No, it's an online bit.
Okay.
I spent 20 minutes trying to find it. I could find handball and canoe, I don't know, slalom. I could find anything.
But the basketball.
The basketball.
Yeah, I'm with you on that because I tried. I even looked up the channel guide, and I'm running into all kinds of stuff via CNBC, via NBC, via MSNBC, all of it, but no basketball.
Yeah, I'm watching Norway versus Korea handball.
Handball, okay.
On TV and not the U.S. basketball game.
Which one is that on?
Oh, gosh.
Is that on 11? No, 11's got to have something a little bit
NBC
more mainstream.
NBC Sports.
Okay, NBC Sports. That's another one. I couldn't even find that one. If you were watching, if you have Peacock and were watching any or all of the USA versus France and would like to deliver a file a live report, email me, Booth, B-O-O-T-H, at KFAN.com, Booth at KFAN.com. We can also take a phone call, 800-320-5326, 651-989-5326. From the box score, it looks maddening because if I'm scrolling down here, first of all, we dominated the first half. We were in good shape at the half, and then France responded, one could say. 25-11, they outscored us in the third quarter to get right back into the game. But it looked as if we had basically stabilized things. See if I can find when we had the... I think we built, actually, yeah, we had, we were up, looks like, see if I can get the play-by-play in the right order here. Again, let me see if I got a final score yet, because the last score I had was with 15 seconds to go. It's over, yeah, 83-76, we lose, 83-76. And we built, I think, like, not a commanding lead, but we were up six or seven with about, you know, 6-7 minutes to go in the fourth, we looked like we had responded to France eruption in the third quarter. And then, quite frankly, we just couldn't, I mean, we couldn't score. We couldn't get anything going at all. And as I said, if you miss, you know, your last seven shots, in fact, yeah, now it actually might be eight, because I also see a Jason Tatum. No, that was earlier in the quarter. Let's go to the end. Let's scroll down to the end of the quarter. Yeah, Holiday missed one late. So, and Lillard missed one right before that. We may have missed. We'll look for the game accounts. Unofficially, I have us missing our last nine shots in a row. And it's difficult, obviously, to win when you are in that position. Actually, look at this. With 3:23 to go in the game, we're up 7, 74-67. Then your guy, Nicholas Batum, nails a three-pointer. That cuts it to 4. Durant misses a shot. And Evan Fournier, another. France has plenty of legitimate NBA players. You've already heard the names of a couple of them. Fournier hits a 3 with 2:33 to go. That cuts the U.S. lead to 2. Booker, fresh off the NBA Finals and just landing, I think, in Tokyo about 15 minutes ago, misses a 3-pointer. France then misses a couple of shots. And then looks like Adebayo has got a chance to cut the, I should say, to extend the U.S. lead to 3. It's 74-72 at this point. He misses a free throw. He misses both free throws at that point. Then Rudy Gobert, another member of the French national team, a well-known name to NBA fans, hits a free throw to cut the U.S. lead to 1. Then there was it appears in the box score, a comedy of errors for the U.S. team. Lillard with a turnover. Nando DiColo with the steal on that play. That eventually leads to an Evan Fournier made three-pointer, which puts France up 76-74. They were still down 1 at that point. He hits the 3 to give the French a 2-point lead with 57 seconds to go. At this point, Durant misses a 3. Adebayo gets an offensive rebound and misses a layup. He gets his own offensive rebound. Levine misses a jumper. France then gets the rebound but turns it over on an Adebayo steal. So we still have a shot. 25 seconds to go, down 2 with the ball. Durant misses a 3. Lillard with an offensive rebound. Holiday misses a 3. France gets that rebound, and Draymond Green fouls Nando DiColo. He makes 2 free throws with 21 seconds to go to extend France's lead to 78-74. Then there's another, after a timeout by the U.S., another Lillard turnover on an Evan Fournier steal. Then we have to foul. Fournier makes 1 of 2 free throws. Then later, Rudy Gobert makes a couple free throws as well. Bottom line is, looks to me like we miss our last 9 shots in a row, and the U.S. finds itself behind the 8-ball immediately. Maybe not all that surprising, but now official, 83-76 to France. Is it time to bring back the college players? Maybe time. Maybe it's time. Although the complication now, bringing back the college players, is they're all going to get paid, you know, as college players with big endorsements. So they might be less interested. They may be too jaded to be interested in playing for their country as well. I have absolutely no idea. One other item, box score. I'm looking at the box score, and early I'd seen, yeah, the bench was a disaster for the U.S. Take these numbers down. 3, 4, 9 out of 10, 12, 13, 19. The U.S. bench was 9 for 32 from the floor. That's not all that good. And Lillard wasn't much better. He was 3 for Durant. 4 for 12, Lillard 3 for 10. As a team, we shot just 36% from the floor. So already, we be curious to see how many times Pop melts down in the post-game presser, because that hasn't been very friendly either. Let's get a pause in early. We got a lot of other stuff to get to. A lot more Olympics stuff I want to discuss over the course of the next 2 hours. Plenty on the this being the week, the Vikings and pretty much every National Football League team opens training camp. Let's be honest. In this division, national media will be descending upon one place, and it ain't Eagan. It's clearly going to be Green Bay, Wisconsin, to find out if the Eagle will land. Will Aaron Rodgers land? I forgot. Are you a big Packers guy?
I plead the fifth.
That must mean yes. The answer must be yes. Interesting. You got a wild jersey.
That's right.
But Packer affiliation. We'll discuss that in a minute. We'll also get into, as I mentioned, the maybe the end of the family atmosphere involving the Minnesota Timberwolves. Lots of show to go. No guests scheduled today.
Oh, but he does it better. KFAN.
U.S. men's Olympic basketball team outscored 14-0 down the stretch, and we lose to France 83-76. I don't even know that you could call it an upset based on recent history, but that's the reality. And I guess it would be classified as an upset to the extent that it is the first time the U.S. has lost an in the Olympics in men's basketball since 2004. I think the streak is 25 straight victories since then. And two of the main men, Durant and Lillard, did nothing. Lillard did shot poorly and also turned the ball over late as well. Evan Fournier led France with 28 points. U.S. behind the eight ball early. Sunday Sermons is the name of the program. I don't want to spend too much more time on this, at least for the moment, except that I'd heard a comment elsewhere on the dial about the dedication, the, I guess you could say, willingness to sacrifice for the good of the country, for the good of the U.S. Olympic men's basketball team, by Middleton and Booker. And the premise was, they just got done. They just got done playing in the NBA Finals. And, you know, Middleton could have said, I want to celebrate. Booker could have said, I'm spent. I got nothing left. It's a long trip. But instead, they stood tall and honored their commitment to the team. Draymond Green said as much the other day, maybe even yesterday as well. And I'm going, you know, I've taken that flight. It's a long flight from the United States of America to Asia, in this case to Japan. But I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to assume that they weren't flying commercial, and they weren't even flying commercial first class. They were flying in a private jet. And it's still, that doesn't change the distance. I get that. But if you make the commitment, you make the commitment. The idea that, well, yeah, they didn't know they were going to be. Well, no, nobody knows that they're going to be in the finals. But if you're going to do it, you do it. So it's nice, but I don't know that they necessarily should get a medal. People are turning this into some sort of supreme sacrifice. Give me a break. Yeah, it's not convenient. They have to be tired. It's a long way to go. But it just so happened that the calendar is weird this year. The calendar on the NBA Finals is weird, and the calendar on when the Olympics are going to be played came right after. But either do it or you don't. There's no, to me, need to turn this into, oh my God, other players, you know, other normal average humans would have just said, enough. I'm spent. I'm emotionally drained. Give me a break. I checked the box score. I don't know if they, well, Booker, I saw, missed a few shots. I don't know if Middleton played, but I had to get that out of my system. I'm a little disappointed in the, I'm not going to lie. I'm a little disappointed in the Minnesota Vixen. I'm now, via the Bradshaw and Brian inbox, booth at KFAN.com, being blamed for their setback. I wanted to blame it on Ziggy Wilf and the Vikings for not matching the generosity of Robert Kraft, who basically said to the Boston Renegades, you shouldn't drive to Canton. Come on. Take my plane. Maybe it'll even inspire you. You know, I got all those Super Bowl trophies on the back wing. I guess it's on the tail, technically. I issued that challenge to the Purple last week. Didn't go anywhere. Another sign of my lack of influence. So, could that be the excuse for the Vixen? I guess it could. You could use it. I hope they don't, but I guess you could. They might. They did seem to wilt at times in the second half, losing ultimately 42-26 in the Women's Football Championship game. That's in the Women's Football Alliance Division I National Championship. Now I'm being blamed because I interviewed the coach and had the play-by-play guy who actually did a nice job on play-by-play. I watched via DirecTV yesterday. I guess there were a lot of ways to get it. I think here's what's sad. It seems as if it were easier to find the WFA championship game than it was to find USA France, which doesn't seem right to me. But anyway, I'm being blamed that I gave them too much attention and it went to their heads and they got distracted. Bottom line is we didn't get it done. And we offensively threatened the Renegades in a way that they're not accustomed to. The Renegades apparently had given up 16 points in 8 games. I don't know if that means that's the most they'd given up in a game or they gave almost only that total up start to finish. Bottom line is we scored 26, but we couldn't stop them. We had a great opportunity when it was, I think, I want to say it was a 1 or 2 score game. Our nose guard, or is it what I guess it would be nose tackle, made an interception, set us up deep in their territory, and I'm saying, this is it. This is where the game turns, and on the next play, we turn the ball over right back to the Renegades, and from that point forward, we couldn't stop them. I want this defense to be improved. That's the next step for the Vixen. They have to find a way to shore up the defense. The running back, Grace Cooper, outstanding. Love watching her run. Very nice running style. Great vision. Ability to get something out of nothing. 202 yards rushing. Scored 4 times, including a 62-yard run in the second quarter. She ain't the problem. Looks to me like we need to shore up the passing a little bit, and we definitely need to get better on defense. But maybe it's inevitable that any football team, Minnesota-based, men or women, doomed to, when they get to the ultimate game, not get the job done. That may just be the reality of it, unfortunately. Bradshaw and Brian inbox is full early. We got a lot of good emails to get to. I'm going to try to get to a couple of them. Todd writes, is the name Lillard French-based? From your recap, sounds like Damian was maybe tanking. The announcers, writes Jeff, of the game here in Canada mentioned that Jrue Holiday got to Japan 24 hours earlier, is probably the best USA player in the game today. No excuses. Well, I'm not going to tell you it's easy to pick up and play right away. I'm not going to say that. But I am going to say, come on. Here's the dilemma I think the U.S. has at this point. We've talked about this for the last couple of weeks. I just don't think this, no matter what they say, this matters to the players as much as it once did when you're making billions and billions of dollars. And the comeback to that would be, yeah, but the teams that are beating them have NBA players. France had at least three, maybe four NBA players who are very well paid, including Rudy Gobert, their starting center. And I agree, but I think the difference is for those countries, there's still a uniqueness. There's still a little added bonus incentive to knock off, you know, Goliath. Even if they know these guys, even if during the season they play these guys, see them every day. And frankly, part of what has gotten lost is it because of the number of players growing each Olympics on other teams who play in the NBA, the intimidation factor is gone. Intimidation factor is just gone now because they are around these guys all the time and they know they indeed can be beaten and are occasionally beatable. Is the third quarter when they put Kevin Love into the game? Wow. It's a cheap shot. Love, of course, bowed out because of an injury, unavailable. There's the Vixen email. I blame you, Dan. You distracted the coaches and players with all the coverage, and they lost focus.
Way to go, Dan. Ruining.
I can't win. But bottom line is we didn't play Vixen football. I think that's the bottom line. We just did not play Vixen football.
Did they not want
did
the
you watch
publicity?
Any of it? Why are you shaking
did
your head not, in disdain like
did they,
that?
Did they not watch the? Did they not want you to talk about them? I don't understand. Wouldn't that be a win for everybody?
Well, that's the box. It's like, well, if you don't talk about them, you're not giving them the coverage they feel like they so richly deserve. And as we talked about, this is sports at its purest. These folks all have they're doctors, as we found out last week, teachers, health workers. They can't make nearly enough money playing in this league to you know make this their full-time job. So they're as invested and committed as you could get. The way the NFL players used to be decades and decades ago when they did not make enough money. So we'll see. Now the standard has been raised, and the question is, can they get back? Can they take the next step? And we'll keep an eye on that story as well. Let's get a break in here. And don't forget, plenty of football training camp discussion to get into and a lot more Olympic stuff beyond the news that the U.S. men's Olympic basketball team lost its opener to France, 83-76. We're already behind the...
On the Fan.
I think the Guardsy plan for tomorrow's show is an attempt to get a visit with John Roethlisberger to talk gymnastics. And one of the things I'm assuming we will talk about, speaking of, I don't know, ominous aspects to the start of the Olympics for the U.S., and it's not all bad by any stretch of the imagination. They had a very nice day in swimming, which we will discuss. Sounds like there's quite a battle going on between the USA and Australia in swimming. Yesterday, we had 5 gold medals. So off to a very nice start there overall. But there was a certain assumption because, again, of the equity that we were on. It's almost automatic that we were going to win our 3rd consecutive Olympic gold in women's gymnastics, the team aspect of it. And apparently that's no longer automatic by any stretch of the imagination. Despite us once again being heavily favored, we finished the qualifying round behind the Russian athletes. Now, as I understand, I say the Russian athletes because, and a lot of people may have forgotten this, and I had it at the bottom of my notebook to discuss on Olympics Primer Day, which we might actually get to tomorrow, even though the Olympics have already begun. The Russian athletes are technically competing individually, not as a country, as part of the punishment for all the cheating that allegedly Russia had been doing over a period of time. It's a complicated story, but we are not where we are supposed to be. I'm looking at the Wall Street Journal account by Louise Radnofsky, Dateline, Tokyo. The team is still assured a spot in the team final, which is scheduled for Tuesday. But Simone Biles, undefeated in national, world, and Olympic and all-around competition since 2013, stood atop the individual standings as competition continued late Sunday. But she had an uncharacteristic number of significant errors, flew out of bounds and off the mat entirely on her third tumbling pass in the floor exercise, which doesn't sound good. Took another big step out of bounds on her Chang vault and staggered backward on her dismount from the balance beam. This is a writer who obviously knows her stuff. The missteps she and other U.S. team members made during qualifications, combined with the unexpectedly strong performances from the Russians, suggests a far more closely fought final than had been anticipated by many. Now, this would almost seem to infer or to suggest that the Russians are being viewed as a group, even though they're technically not allowed to compete as a group. So I'll have to get some clarification from Roethlisberger on that, maybe on tomorrow's show. But apparently we're not dominating early the way we were supposed to. On the men's side, our guy, Shane Wiskus, the former Gopher, he helped his four-man team get into the qualifying round. We, on that side, seem to be off to a promising start. He did, apparently, according to Rachel Blount's story, miss the floor exercise final, barely, finishing ninth in qualifying, which was his best mark of the night, but not enough. But in any case, they on the men's side, they did very well in their qualifying round, almost treating it like a training session or a team camp. Part-time guy Brett, we're big, Gargi and I are both, and we may even be in the minority on this because we've been together for several Olympics, and of course I covered seven before I stopped being an ink stain wretch. So I'm an Olympics guy. I enjoy it. I don't pretend to concentrate on a lot of the qualifying stuff or get into it in off years. But at the time of the competitions, I enjoy this stuff. I get into this stuff. We tend to cover a lot of it using all the assets we can. In this case, it's a little more complicated because they are in Japan. And frankly, some of our assets aren't in Japan because Roethlisberger is a good example. He's doing some of the analyzing, but I think he's in a studio somewhere. I think somewhere in the East Coast. Are you fascinated by the Olympics? Completely bored by the Olympics? Somewhere in between?
I'm a huge Winter Olympics guy. I mean, shock of all shocks, the hockey guy loves the Winter Olympics. But I really
Olympics do. Are outstanding.
Yeah, I think they're 1,000 times better than Summer Games. I've always said if Team USA is playing, I will watch it. Whether that's, you know, I'm locked into the World Cup if we qualify, which we
right,
should.
Sure.
I'm locked into that or the Gold Cup that's happening later. I'll watch that. So, yeah, if I see, like, if I'm passing through and I see Team USA is playing, you know, in, I guess, handball is the only sport I'm thinking of because it's still on or whatever, I'm locked in. But I just think the Summer Games are kind of boring in comparison.
Well, the advantage, I think, of the Winter Games for me, in terms of covering them, would be the esoteric nature, beyond the obvious hockey, the esoteric nature of some of those sports, that it's just a refreshing change from the bats and the balls.
Yeah.
That you get some sports that otherwise, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on luge, except at the Olympics. But then it's kind of cool, and then it's kind of fun to watch. I think there's enough esoteric sports in the men's on the summer side, too, that it keeps me interested. And I don't mind the meat and potatoes. But there's a lot to enjoy about the winter games, but we'll be covering a lot of the summer games as well. And one of the things we laid out last week was a prediction that these were going to be the hottest Summer Olympic Games ever. And speaking of, again, the Wall Street Journal, they had a piece pretty much confirming that early the conditions are so sweltering that they are adversely affecting some athletes. And I don't know if the U.S. men's Olympic basketball team can use that as an excuse, because I'm assuming that game against France was indoors.
I hope there's AC in
and
there.
Air conditioning.
Yeah.
Although that would add another element to it if indeed there was no air conditioning working. But they mention that the issue isn't just the temperature, which has been apparently in the 90s, but humidity topping 80%, dew points around 70, which is pretty tropical. Now, I also saw a headline, and I don't know if this is weather terrorism or true, that a typhoon is headed for Tokyo and supposed to land around there by Monday. I'm not a great typhoon mind. If you are, Bradshaw and Brian inbox, booth@kfan.com. But that's another report that and that would, at the very least, might adversely affect some of the outdoor stuff that's taking place. Apparently, a Russian archer lost consciousness due to the heat after finishing her qualifying round. That's according to the Russian Olympic Committee. So take it with a grain of salt. They might be making it up. Who's to say? Tennis matches. Heat was discussed as an issue. Players took medical timeouts, reached for ice packs to cool down as well. Tennis star Medvedev said, some of the worst heat I've ever had. Humidity, brutal. So the hard courts absorb the heat and it stays trapped in there. There was also, I guess there's a note in this story that at the U.S. track and field trials in Eugene last month, they had an unprecedented heat wave as well. So this is sort of following that same line. So we'll keep an eye on that. I mean, a couple people have emailed about the question. Well, actually, this is from Love the Grum Gal. I'm bored with everyone saying they won't watch because there are no fans. I did not even notice last night or this morning. It's just fun. The only place I noticed it was the opening ceremonies, where athletes, you know, they did the traditional Parade of Nations thing, and they're waving. And they're waving to empty stands. I guess you
could
say,
like a seat night in Tokyo. Yeah.
They might be, you could say, waving to their families back home. Okay, that's fine. I found that a little bit on the hollow side. And look, I'll watch, and I said all along, performance can trump everything and can get you just concentrating on that as opposed to who's not in the stands. But as we're reminded by the Bucks winning it at home, there's still nothing like a spontaneous organic combustion that takes place involving a winning team, a championship team, and its fan base, right? I mean, that's it at its best. And so if there's not going to be those kind of moments in the crowd, and I know Olympic crowds are you know, set up a little differently, I think it'll hurt. I think it'll bug me a little bit. It won't stop me from watching, but I think it will take away. Now, NBC's smart. They're playing it smart. What do they have set up? Well, they got live cams set up at wherever parents of the best U.S. athletes are performing in their homes to get that reaction. That at least gives you an element of crowd emotion, even if it's not taking place inside the arena, because as has been well established, parents, friends, family we're not allowed to make the trip to Tokyo. We got hour number two coming up. A lot of Vikings training camp stuff in this hour, including some of the key questions we have going in. By the way, Gardzi, I'm off Wednesday, but Gardzi will be at training camp Wednesday. We will both be there on Thursday's broadcast. Among our guests Thursday, we assume will be Zimmer, but we also expect a chance to visit with Robert Smith, who's going to be in town. I think Randy Moss is doing some big fishing event. His big fishing event is early this week, and we expect to chat on location with our old friend Robert Smith as well. So some Viking stuff and some trouble in paradise for the most aligned, collaborative franchise in the National Basketball Association.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature. And you will a tone.
Mark B. trying to get me going via some trolling as we start hour two of Sunday sermons, suggesting that the NBA players do have an excuse. The idea that the players coming in late don't have a right to be tired. Actually, I didn't say they did not have that right, but that's okay. I'll go with the troll, saying that all spring and summer I've needed load management for a job that requires zero physical expenditure. I only have one rejoinder to that. Last trip, or second to last trip, I took back from Maui. We landed at 1 o'clock in the afternoon after flying all night and not flying in a private jet. And I showed up at 3 and did one of the best shows we've ever done. That's all I can tell you. That's the only answer I can give back to you. But it was a good try. Training camp starts this week, boys and girls. Yes, for those who live and die with professional football, the abyss is about to evaporate right in front of all of our eyes. This show will be at training camp both Wednesday and Thursday. I'm assuming the project will be there forever. There was a good primer list by our guy Ben Gessling, Star Tribune today. On significant questions, I think he's got top five questions pertaining to this club heading in. And for me, numbers 1, 3, and 5 are the key to this whole thing. And I know other numbers include where Kirk Cousins is, and we've talked Kirk Cousins to death, but I... As a guy who's not as high as my weekday partner is as on Cousins, I still believe items 1, 3, and 5 are key. And frankly, if you're asking me to boil it down to one, let's start with number 3. Number 3 on Gessling's list is simply, how will the latest offensive line makeover turn out? Very telling sentence. The latest offensive line makeover.
Yeah, that's been on the list for, what, 15 years
we've
now?
We've done, and we've done, I don't know. I mean, who's had more makeovers? The Minnesota Timberwolves blueprint for success or the Vikings offensive line? I mean, we've had a bunch. And even the way he lays it out is a reminder of just how open-ended and iffy this is. It doesn't mean it can't come together. But it means it's probably a little arrogant to think it can in one season, given the turnover again, given the changes that are being anticipated. He mentions it, he writes it this way. They landed the player they hope will be their solution at left tackle in first-round pick Christian Darrisaw. But he's got to show he can handle the job. He might be brilliant, but we don't know. And there are a number of people not convinced that he could walk in and be that good. Third round pick, he writes, Wyatt Davis will have to win the right guard spot after the Vikings moved Ezra Cleveland back to the left side. It's also a pivotal year for third year center Garrett Bradbury, who's particularly struggled against skilled interior rushers. You get the point there? This is all built on the premise that Darrisaw can walk in, Davis can walk in, and that Bradbury can rebound. Now, could all those three of those things happen? Yes, but that's awfully open-ended, and it's awfully presumptuous to expect that this year they're all going to come together and it's going to work, especially with the complicating factor that was revealed on Friday. Rick Dennison, who has not been vaccinated against COVID-19, is apparently still in negotiations of some sort with the Vikings, but will not be able to coach this team along the offensive line, this crucial spot in which there's all these new pieces that you're trying to make work together and to congeal into something significant. He ain't going to be available unless he decides to get the Johnson & Johnson shot today. I don't want to overrate the importance of assistant coaches, but presumably it matters a bit, especially in this spot. So the Cousins thing is directly related to this anyway. If the protection on pass plays doesn't get better, then Cousins is going to get worse. The running game might be fine with the zone blocking scheme. That might be fine. But in terms of the passing game, that's the issue. What he has as number three to me is number one with a bullet. If I'm prioritizing, my second item is the one he lists first. What will the starting secondary look like? We've got guaranteed money, Gessling writes, to Patrick Peterson and Breland. And he writes, that suggests the veteran corners will get every chance to start. Mackenzie Alexander is back. He could end up being nickel guy. You got the Jeff Gladney complication. He is awaiting a Dallas County grand jury decision about whether to indict him. I think that's coming up later this month. At this point, I don't think you can count on him. You have to hope, this thing gets resolved. But the charges against him are pretty damn serious. Remember, Anthony Harris is gone. Maybe out of necessity. Can't pay everybody. Xavier Woods is in. The Hitman, back for season 10, as we know. And the big switch along the secondary is the obvious. A year ago, we brought in a bunch of young draft picks and said, we're not afraid to play kids. We know what we're doing. We know how to build defenses. They're that good. That's how training camp started. Our first conversation we had with the head coach, Mike Zimmer. And it was a disaster.
And then all year long, well, we've got kids playing out there.
That's exactly it. They use it the other way. Well, now I think we're finding out how they really feel. We've got a lot of we've added back a lot of experience. The question is it the right experience? Patrick Peterson, when he was in his prime, was excellent. Does he have another run in him? My gut is he probably does, but it's an open question. And Breland, maybe. But given the degree to which passing is the key to everything for most NFL teams, this is another very unsettled area where lots of new pieces need to come together fast, including at the safety position opposite the Hitman. His number five item is number three for me, as another sign that as confident as people seem to be that we're going to bounce back, I say, man, we got a lot of open questions. And this one's sneaky important that we have concentrated on for the entire offseason and doesn't get as much attention for the obvious reason that we tend to pay more attention to regular aspects of the team. But the kicking situation. Place kicker. If you're a Vikings fan, you can never be satisfied, even when you think you have it figured out. But in this case, we got rid of Dan Bailey. We cut him. I don't necessarily blame the Vikings for that because Bailey wasn't the kicker that he was before. But we added a bargain basement guy named Greg Joseph. And so far, we have him and we have an undrafted free agent named Riley Patterson. That's it. As Gessling notes, Patterson missed much of the Vikings offseason program for undisclosed reasons. And Joseph last played in the NFL in 2019 when he was with the Titans for two games. So that's the scary part. Even if everything else comes together, presumably, if you're good, you're going to play in a lot of close games. And the difference might be somebody's leg. How confident do you feel about Greg Joseph, who's really never done anything in the National Football League of note, and this, I didn't even know anything about this undrafted free agent until today, but that's another, and look, I don't know that there's another kicker out there, but that's lurking. That is looming, even when we've had more established kickers, let alone guys who really don't have much pedigree, and you're trying to get by on the cheap because you have so many other salary cap issues, and you're just hoping that one of these guys is going to emerge. What if we're in a lot of close games because the secondary does come together and because the offensive line does come together, but you're not necessarily blowing everybody off the face of the earth, so in the fourth quarter you need some key kicks, or maybe even the third quarter you need a kick to extend the lead, and we're counting on guys that really no one has ever heard of. So to me, those are, he's got five, but for me, those are the big three, and in order for me, it remains and will remain forever until it gets fixed. Offensive line, in this case, secondary because of the turnover, even though the names now are more familiar again. And thirdly, the kicking situation. The other two he lists for the record, part-time guy Brett, Cousins, which also always has to be covered, and will the Vikings have enough pass rush, which is another fair question, given we don't know if we're going to get the Danielle Hunter that we remember. I'm going to go out on a limb and say we have a better chance at that than we do this offensive line coming together. But those are the five. What's at the top of your priority list, even though you hate the Vikings?
I don't hate the Vikings.
Well, you dislike them.
Nah. I mean, I don't like the Bears.
Are you objective about them? I mean, if you're a Packer fan, it's hard for you to be objective.
I mean, pretty much, yeah. As long
how
as
did
it
you become a Packer fan if you're a Wild fan? I don't understand it.
Long story short, my whole dad's side lives in Wisconsin, and that's how I grew up. Okay. So that's kind of how it is.
Did you grow up in Wisconsin?
I grew up in Iowa.
Oh, you did?
So, yeah, in Des Moines, it's just the Wild West.
You can be whoever you want. I thought that was big Bears country. No?
It's big everything country. You can have a neighborhood. There's a Vikings fan across the street. There's two Packers fans, and there's three Bears fans over there. So, yeah, and then the Wild, I just ended up, I loved hockey, and that was the closest one, and I loved going there. You know, that's why I live here, because I love the Wild so much more than everything else. My biggest question is, how long until the majority of Vikings fans want Kellen Mond starting? How many snaps is it going to take? Because I was fielding calls last year calling for Nate Stanley to play. And if that's the case, I feel like it's only a matter of time before people are yelling for that.
How many preseason games do we have now? Is it three or two?
Great question.
I don't even know. I think we're down to three, but you can double check. You don't have to wait long. If Mond has a good fourth quarter against a third team, there'll be calls for him right away.
I think three.
If you go back to, you're probably too young, but there was a time that the Vikings had a backup quarterback named Gino Toretta, who was, of course, a great college quarterback at Miami. And he had a couple of fourth quarters that were to die for. You know, against, again, the other team's third or fourth string, players who were literally on the streets the next week. And people were just captivated by him. And they couldn't help themselves, and they wanted Toretta to be the guy. In fact, I think there were a couple of polls indicating that they were ready to go with Gino. So, yeah, it'll happen, because for the first time you've invested a legitimate draft choice in a quarterback, in a young quarterback. Not one who I'm particularly intrigued by going in on the basis of his college career, but that some people in the Vikings organization love. I heard a couple of them suggest that they actually like him as much or more than Justin Fields, which I think is preposterous statement tournament territory, frankly, myself. But who knows? I mean, the fact is, the way they've done the position has been wrongheaded, I think, for a while. We have had no legitimate backup. We've gotten away with it because Cousins has stayed healthy, but we haven't had a legitimate backup in quite some time. And to me, legitimacy is either I prefer a veteran who's played and can show he can carry a team, at least, you know, play serviceably well for a couple of games. But if you're not going to do that, then it should be a draft pick in which you're not just sort of throwing something against the wall. You've invested a decent pick in him because you think there's things that intrigue you enough about the possibility that he might be worth considering somewhere down the road.
Well, I can tell you as a Packers fan, which, again, Wild fan the most, it is scary. The fact that the Vikings and the Bears, it feels like, have finally figured out what's went wrong. I mean, how long have the Bears been trying to get a quarterback? For decades?
Yeah, decades. And they swung and missed with Trubisky, but they at least...
It seems like they learned from their mistakes, and they got Fields. That's scary. And then it seems like the Vikings, who I can't remember the last time they've really... I mean, Ponder, but that's a huge swing and miss,
too. That was too, correct.
It seems like this is the first time they actually have a project quarterback that can sit and develop and not just have to throw them into the fire right away. True. People in the NFC North are learning from their mistakes, and meanwhile, Green Bay's on fire. So, yeah, I'm you know, maybe the NFL is just not for me this next decade. It's going
to
be tough.
I'll allow you to answer the $64,000 question as it pertains to the NFC North and upcoming training camp week when we return. We can mix in more emails. Bradshaw and Brian inbox is open, booth@KFAN.com, or you can give us a call, Vikings-related, 800-320-5326 or 651-989-5326. In fact, I'll throw out the question now for you to ponder during – for you to ponder during the break, and it'll also give the listeners another subject to bounce off of if they'd like to call in. Will Aaron Rodgers show up in Green Bay Packers training camp? In some phone calls here on Sermons. Cake Show will follow 11 until 1 o'clock. My sources say that Garza had a fill-in on Tita Green yesterday. Were you working yesterday?
I was.
You were part of the festivities?
You know, he's got to work on the flourish, but, you know, we'll keep we'll keep working with him on
it. Did you use the same bumper song that Common has used? Literally, that didn't change, right?
And it's every break.
Every break.
And it's the outro.
It's the intro, the outro, the whole bit. Right?
Well, the flourish is just it's part of the show. It wouldn't be the same without it.
Love Unlimited Orchestra. Nothing quite like it. Close circuit to emailer Mark, who sent me a really nice musical find. It's a remake of a classic top 40 song from back in the day. The song is called Brandy, parentheses, You're a Fine Girl. And it was done by Looking Glass, as I recall it. But he found a new rendition, I'm assuming it's new, by Big Head Todd and the Monsters, which I love. Whoa. It's really nicely done. Then I tried to find it via streaming, like as a single. I can't. I can only find it via his... I may forward this to you, and maybe we can come back, and if you know how to technologically play, because this is out of... his link is a YouTube link. And it's almost like them... in a studio setting, but I can't find it on any. Is this it? Brilliant.
Yeah, I bumped back with this few, the original one.
There's a port on the Western Bay, and it serves 100 ships a day on the sailor.
I like this. This is Big Head Todd and the Monsters.
What a great band name, too.
It is a great band name, and I don't even know if they're doing anything actively. If you're a Big Head Todd expert, email us, Bradshaw and Brian inbox, booth@kfan.com. We got some phone calls to get to. We got to discuss some alignment issues at Mayo Clinic Square, home of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Trouble in Paradise. All that. We're one big family. We got rid of the oppressor. All that, all those platitudes, all those cliches, those obnoxious cliches that were overcooked, overdone at the time. And we tried to warn you that it's rarely that simple, that it's always more complicated. And now we have some evidence of a crack in that veneer. And it does have an Olympic component to it as well. By the way, for the record, your Green Bay Packers are scheduled to report to training camp on Tuesday. Will Aaron Rodgers be there? That's for you. And then I'll get to some callers on that subject.
I've been wrong at every step of this fiasco this offseason. I have had no idea what's happening. My gut is that he'll be there, but he'll probably make a few offhand comments and it'll still keep going. But I don't know, man. It's
impossible to know.
Yeah, I've been wrong at every step of the way.
It's really hard to know. My gut tells me he won't be there for reporting day, but that doesn't mean he won't show up for training camp at some point. I don't know why. There's still a nagging suspicion that it's not a guarantee that he's played his last game with the Packers. Now, I know some people I respect who believe it's absolutely done. It's just a matter of the Packers getting to that place where they understand it and you know, then, you know, start talking about trades and figuring out the best deal that they can make, which could happen.
Well, I've known people that thought the trade to Denver was a done deal, and we were just waiting for June 2nd, and it's guaranteed. Mark your calendars, bet your house, and didn't happen.
Let's take a couple phone calls, including a call out of South Carolina on the Rodgers subject. Dave, you're on the Fan. Go ahead.
Hey, Dan, it's Dave from South Carolina. Now it's Tennessee, so I'm getting a little bit closer.
You're getting there little by little. By maybe the next decade, who's to say? You might actually make it to the Midwest.
Yes, and, you know, I've been there many times. I've been going to games since 76. I actually showed my new wife a couple of Viking Super Bowl replays on now, NFL Network yesterday, just to let her know how deeply the dismay goes.
So is that you worried that's going to affect the relationship, or does she seem on board with all of that? I'd hate to think that would be the thing that came between you.
Yeah, we've been dating for about 3 years,
okay.
And before we got married, she's completely on board, and she falls right into the same category as all of us now.
So Fair enough.
We're good. And after watching Milwaukee win their championship, I sat here at about midnight to 1 o'clock, just, you know, like a lot of Vikings fans, just imagining what would happen to be able to enjoy that. As I'm 50 years old now, and the last time we were in Super Bowl was on my dad's lap about 45 years ago. So it's been a while.
It certainly has.
But what I do want to say is, I do want to say this. I think he'll be back. I think that the way the contract is set up and the way that the, you know, the quarterback they have there is on that rookie deal where he still has that fifth-year option. They still have a couple years to get him ready. I think if you look at their salary cap implications, he'll be back. I really don't care about that, to be honest with you. I think we have enough talent to win the division with or without him. But I do think that I was telling the gentleman that took my call, real nice, I appreciate his time, was that my feeling is I'm excited about this year, Dan, because whatever happens, it's going to either be successful, right, finally, or, you know, we make changes in the off season. And I think so as a Vikings fan going into it, I really feel that either or will definitely happen because of the talent and because of what happened yesterday. It's a third receiver and all these things. I'm going to tell you one quick story. I was actually doing Uber a few years ago, and I listened to the Yacht Rock, and that song was on, Brandy, and the young guy in the car, his buddy, his father was the drummer for the band that plays that song. So it's kind of a neat little story. And
seriously,
I want to tell you one last thing.
Okay.
I only call you anymore. I don't call any other talking heads on there. I got no problem with the gentleman before you. And I love Paul Allen's passion. But I called years ago after the game and talked about the three defensive back scheme that we played against the Saints in the playoff game. And I was told that I was crazy and off my rocker, and I couldn't call back in. I was just thrown in with the roof. So don't know how that happened because I know my football. But
you got banned? Who banned you?
Well, believe it or not, I hate to say this to you, but I know you love to stir things up.
Yeah.
It was your general manager. Yeah.
Seriously? You got banned?
And I called him back and questioned to make sure who it was, and he told me it was him.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, I'm sure he's by now he's thought it through, and he's seen the error of his ways.
I don't know. I know he's got a pretty stubborn guy, but I'm a pretty knowledgeable guy.
No doubt.
Anybody knows me knows that. But anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for checking in. Thanks for getting closer to the Midwest as well. I don't remember that controversy, but I'll take his word for it. He did allude to something worth mentioning we haven't talked about. Dede Westbrook. We worked him out, and apparently, we being the Vikings, we expect for him to be added. Perhaps it's expected to be a one-year deal and could very well be our third wide receiver. He used to catch for the Jaguars, and apparently the connection with McCardle, Keenan McCardle, who is the new Vikings receivers coach, was of interest to Westbrook, and we expect that he might well end up being. We've been kind of searching, have we not? We were very happy with our top two receivers, and we've been searching a long time for the concept of a third, and it appears that there's a good chance that he might do that. And as Gessling points out, he also could be, we've got punt return challenges as well, one could say. Last year, how bad were we? We averaged 4.3 yards on the 16 punts we returned last year. That's just beyond feeble. So maybe he ends up being exactly that guy. So as the story goes, reading the Gessling piece, he was supposed to visit the Vikings today, the Seahawks today, their training camp or their offices and practice fields. And apparently after working out here, the Vikings said, we don't want you to get on that plane. And so we believe there's a good chance that they're going to be able to come to some terms and be a factor. In 2018 and 19, caught 66 passes each year, tore his ACL last October. So you got an ACL issue, but that's no longer the kiss of death that it once was. So we might have located our third wide receiver. Look who's checking in. It's Minnesota Lynx bus driver guy. How are you, sir? Welcome to the program once again.
Hey, Dan. How are you doing today?
Doing very well, thank you.
I think Rodgers has just been playing this thing. You know, he's a jokester. You know, he likes to play jokes. He likes to have fun, and it just never ends. Okay? And I think he's just playing this. I think he's going to show up. I think he might not show up right away, but I think he will eventually be there, unfortunately, in that Packer uniform.
That's what my gut tells me. Thanks for checking in. I have no inside intel on this. And as I said, there are people who've been covering this story for quite some time, much more closely, who say they think it's done. I just, you know, and we've already heard it now twice in this offseason because of two different media reports. One that came early, one that got extra attention because it was ESPN Bigfoot guy, even though it's the second time it had been reported that he'd already turned down a two-year contract extension that was going to make him the highest paid player, etc. There's a part of me that says he can be bought off, even if he says he can't, but maybe they just haven't come in at the right number yet. Maybe they haven't come in the right number of years yet. Maybe he wants to also get a title of assistant general manager.
That's my theory.
Which I'd be willing to give him if I were the Packers, because he is still Aaron Rodgers. But we'll see. We're not going to know until we know. And I don't think there's reason to believe that the Packers yet are at the point where they believe he's not going to come. Because I think at some point when that light bulb goes off, then you have to start looking around. You just have to, even if you don't want to, even if you don't want to start the Jordan Love era as quickly as that would entail. If you become convinced he's serious, that's another issue. Wasn't there another story just a few days ago that suggested he was going to retire? He was going to announce his retirement. That was going to be the strategy. I guess he could still do that.
Well, the sports books pulled.
Oh, that's what it was.
The Packers over under because they think that he's going to retire.
Yeah.
Whether or not that's plausible at all, I guess they wouldn't do that without. That's the argument. Well, they wouldn't do that without some insider knowledge that he's going to retire. But I don't know. I think it's just a precaution.
Who was the quarterback who? That's how he strategized his way out of his
Palmer.
It was Palmer. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's what he did. So, is it a possibility? Yeah, we might try to. You know, I know Kevin Seifert's going to be there, at camp on Tuesday. So maybe we'll try to get him, see if he can file a live report from for us from that location, from the scene. One last break. Let's get into some alignment issues involving your Minnesota Timberwolves with an Olympic twist.
FAN.
Last thing I'd ever want to do is sensationalize the importance of a story involving a non-foundational player. Because I think most of us would suggest that Juancho Hernan Gomez is not a foundational part of the Minnesota Timberwolves' future. If you go back to the couple seasons ago, he was very intriguing, very promising. Last year, not so good. Word from the experts was that he did not come into training camp in proper shape, and he, this past season, struggled. Nevertheless, for a team that has labored far too intensely for me to hit every hot-button catchphrase, to invoke every hot-button catchphrase it can regarding collaboration, alignment. You go through the list. Every one of them in this belief that the previous regime was not inclusive, previous regime was dictatorial, that it was led by the oppressor, they suddenly find themselves in an embarrassing position, regardless of the importance of the player. And there is an Olympic component to this, because the verbal battle, right now it's kind of one-sided, between the Spanish Basketball Federation and the Wolves, specifically Gerson Rosas, is intense. Basically, as Johnny Athletic has written, Hernan Gomez and the Spanish Basketball Federation are angry. Very angry with the Wolves. And when I say the Wolves, again, it seems to come down to Rosas. Spanish officials, Hernan Gomez was a member of the Spanish team. And Spanish officials are saying, wait a minute, at the very last minute, you guys did some dirty pool on us. And you betrayed us. We thought we could count on this player, despite an injury, to be ready or at least have the opportunity to be a part of our Olympic team in Tokyo. And we believe, say the Spaniards, that medical personnel from both Spain and Minnesota gave Hernan Gomez approval to play. The Wolves are saying, we never cleared him. Earlier in the month, he had suffered a dislocated shoulder. So the battle is on. And interestingly, the comments are frontal. Here's a quote from the Spanish Basketball Federation president, Jorge Garbajosa. We've had countless medical meetings, and we've never received a no. We have received a yes. We don't have a problem with the Minnesota Timberwolves or the NBA. It's a problem of people, not medical personnel, who have personally decided that Juancho couldn't play. I'm talking about their president of basketball operations. That, of course, would be Gerson Rosas. Background here, he dislocated his left shoulder in an exhibition game against France on the 8th of July. But after originally signaling that this is going to be hard for him to be a part of the team, apparently he recovered pretty quickly, or more quickly than expected. Spanish Federation had him on the Olympic roster on July 19. And according, once again, to the Federation, Minnesota gives us a reason that their doctors have never given the okay. There were six people from the national team in that meeting who testified that they clearly gave the yes. In the 21st century, with six people who speak English perfectly, it's incomprehensible to give that reason. Garbajosa is saying, look, if the Wolves had told Spain then that Hernan Gomez would not be able to play when they spoke in Vegas, they would not have taken him to Tokyo in the first place. They're arguing about the timing of Rosas notifying Spain that he would not be permitted to play this week, more than the decision itself, which they may think is defensible. You're trying to protect your player. But I heard Sam Mitchell say, a really crucial thing, not related to this story, but more generally. If you acquire or select in the draft a player from Europe, for example, what he's learned over the years is they want to play for their national teams. And so you have to factor that into your thinking. They might actually be more committed to that bit than U.S. players are to committing to the U.S. Olympic team. So at the very least, there's a pretty significant disconnect here. And based on what I'm hearing, the Spain Federation has a legitimate point that it's all about the timing, that this was sort of pulled at the last minute without any sort of indication, that it could have easily been prevented with better communication. Let me repeat that. Could have been prevented with better communication. And what's this new form of the Timberwolves supposed to be all about? Great communication, because the oppressor never communicated. So, again, this is not a foundational player. But I think Johnny Athletic, based on what he's written here, indicates, and we'll talk to him about this in more depth tomorrow, that they got some rehabilitation to do here in terms of trust between player and franchise. And it frankly shouldn't matter whether the player is foundational or not. If you are hanging your hat on what I think is an overcooked concept that people like to talk about because they like invoking every one of the catchphrases associated with alignment and collaboration and all that. But in the end, as I said many, many months ago when we talked about this, the fact of the matter is every general manager, every team has to make difficult decisions, and in some cases, tough decisions, and in some cases, maybe a wrong-headed decision in this case, and then deal with the aftermath of it. There is no such thing as perfection on this. And I'll also say, I've never bought the notion that inclusion regarding everybody having an equal voice and everybody feeling, I guess you could say, included or validated by the approach you take, I don't believe is necessarily the key to success. And there's plenty of franchises in which sometimes we got to make tough calls, and sometimes we might even have to hurt feelings, and that might be just part of the deal. In this case, what makes the Wolves look bad is they've made this such a staple. They've made this sort of the centerpiece, and at the very least, it may well be he's too hurt for them to want to risk a recurrence, given that we're paying the team, the player. Wolves might have every right to that, but it sure as hell sounds like they could have conveyed that message a lot sooner, and that's where the Wolves look bad in this situation. Not their desire to play, to be cautious, to err on the side of caution, but their unwillingness to communicate, to use that catchword, more effectively or earlier in this process, when it certainly appears that they had pretty much every chance to do exactly that. Here's a quote. There's another comment from Garbajosa. Before the team left for Japan, Hernan Gomez received a message of congratulations from Wolves coach Chris Finch. Sources told The Athletic that was a text message. Garbajosa also said a consultation with Aaron Searer, I may be mispronouncing that name, S-I-E-R-E-R, Timberwolves assistant athletic trainer and physical therapist, was positive in nature. 4 hours before the exhibition game against the USA, there was a meeting between the doctors of the national team and the doctors of the Timberwolves franchise, who congratulated Juancho and the national team on the recovery, unquote. Timberwolves' perspective is that, writes Johnny, is that doctors and medical staff were relaying that they were happy Hernan Gomez's recovery was going smoothly, but they never said he was cleared to return to playing and never viewed the Olympics as a realistic option. But then, again, at that point, wouldn't you make that clear and say, well, we're happy for the recovery or for the progress, but this, we want to clarify here. We can't sign off on him playing. This shouldn't be that difficult, and it doesn't have to be the end of the world, again, given who the player is, but it flies in the face of this, you know, we're all brothers, we're all in this together, and there's oneness, and we will never hurt feelings because we will always make sure everybody is happy with every decision that we make. That's not possible. Not a way to be successful, I don't think, in conduct. You're going to hurt feelings, and you're going to have to confront, and you're going to occasionally have to make people feel uncomfortable. In this case, it appears as if they've made a support player uncomfortable needlessly on the basis of their lack of communication much earlier in this process. So we'll see if it where it kind of goes from here. But he is out. By the way, for the record, the U.S. men's Olympic team that lost to France, we talked about that early throughout the show in their opening game. If you're just joining us or just waking up, France beat us, outscored us 16-2 the last 3.5 minutes to beat the U.S. in a first-round game, 83-76. Our next two games are supposed to be gimmies. We're going to advance, but then, of course, when you advance, it's single elimination. And you got some tough opponents. Door might maybe open to La Roja and our guy Ricky Rubio. I don't know. But in any case, we'll keep an eye on and get more details from this from Johnny Athletic on the Juancho Hernan Gomez kerfuffle.
Yeah, and I'm reading right now that government officials are trying to clear up the dual citizenship of Kevin Durant so he could play for France the next in the next Olympics.
Wow. Well, somebody threw out Lillard's name, wondered if that was French, because he was awful, also shot poorly, and had two key turnovers down the stretch. There was one possession in which we had five shots. They were all three-pointers, and they were all missed. May I suggest, as Tim Legler, the ESPN analyst, did, that even though the game has changed and it's about three-pointers, it is not illegal to beat somebody off the dribble, take the ball to the basket, try to score, or get fouled. As he points out, we got guys who can beat people off the dribble, even other good NBA players. So the idea that we are somehow obligated to take nothing but three-pointers, no. Even Chris Paul reminded us a little bit that it's okay to take the mid-range jumper. Especially when you're struggling, it might not be a bad idea. Or indeed, you could get to the free throw line as well. Bradshaw and Brian inbox booth at KFAN.com. Few people are saying they got the new version of Brandy via iTunes and a couple other spots. I have to keep looking. My search might not have been complete enough, but that it is available. I don't know how new it is. If this this listener just discovered it, or in fact it's new, but it sounded pretty good to me. As a big fan of that old top 40 hit going way back. I think the original group is Looking Glass, if I'm not mistaken. They had another semi-hit by the name of Jimmy Loves Marianne. Do you remember that one? You're probably a little too young.
I thought they were a one-hit wonder. They were.
I'm not sure Jimmy Loves Marianne reached the same level. Highly underrated as another top 40, very catchy hooks. Or catchy hook in Jimmy Loves Marianne. And it's also been done and redone several times as well. This could be a big week on the Bumper to Bumper show because it's training camp week. It's also Olympic first week. So our approach is going to be dual, I would say. A lot on training camp as we get closer, and then live broadcasts from training camp on this show Wednesday and Thursday. And we expect among the cavalcade of guests, Mike Zimmer and former Vikings running back Robert Smith, who has told me he's going to be in town for the big Randy Moss fishing event. By the way, KG yesterday sent out a video tweet in which it appeared he was on a ride at the Mall of America yesterday. I retweeted it without actually listening to what he said. And then the tweet was deleted. So I got a DM from one of us Hollywood actor guy who was part of our California Dreaming show on Friday saying, what did KG say? And I said, well, I got to admit, I didn't listen, which might have been a mistake in retweeting it. So I don't know why he deleted it. If anybody has an answer to that, let me know via Twitter, Dan Barrero, KFAN, because I'm kind of curious myself. It was his real account, and I thought it was certainly plausible that he would be. He still visits Minnesota from time to time. The fact that he was on this one of those merry-go-round circle rides was kind of funny to me. But I have no idea if there's a mystery to why he deleted said tweet. If there's anything controversial or he just got bored with the way it looked, I'm not exactly sure. But we'll attempt to find out.
I just want to say the Jimmy Loves Marianne came out in 1973. You said you might be too young for that. I was negative 23 when that song came out.
So you might be too young for
a little bit.
Yeah,
a little bit. A little bit for my time.
All right. Cake Show's coming up, although I don't see him. Is he doing it from home today?
We're doing the Big Ten segment.
It's the Big Ten today. Stuff. Yeah. Yep. Oh, it's a good show. He's got, because he was in Indy for the Big Ten Media Day on college football, and a lot of really good Gopher stuff. So that's coming up between now and 1 o'clock. John Roethlisberger, we think, will join us tomorrow to talk Olympic gymnastics and Johnny Athletic on the Wancho controversy and much, much more. That starts at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Please join us then, but stay tuned for Cake Show next.